You are listening to the Amen Corner, a JCast Network podcast. For more information about other JCast Network podcasts and blogs, please visit jcastnetwork.org. For more information about the Amen Corner, please follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and all your other favorite social media.
Welcome to episode 3, season 8 of the Amen Corner. He's Stephen Cook.
He's Brad Rupchop.
Hey.
Yes. So?
It's been not a great week for any of us. I think it's fair to say that anybody who's listening to us knows exactly what's going on and what we're talking about. We didn't do the podcast last weekend because we had already gotten news about the horrific acts of terror that were perpetrated against Israeli civilians and as well as military targets last weekend by Hamas. Stephen and I decided that it was not the time last weekend for us to opine about what was going on, especially as the situation was still unfolding. It was still live while we would have recorded the podcast. We obviously are going to have very strong feelings about this. I think we do have very strong feelings about this. We're both, not speaking for Stephen, but I think I can say fairly that we're both beyond sad and concerned and worried, both personally, on a personal level, and as human beings, as Jews, as, you know, it sounds stupid and cliche, but some of our closest friends are Israeli, and they really are. Israel is such a small country that everybody knows it is like 1 degree separated from somebody who was either murdered last weekend or kidnapped or is missing. And it's awful. It you know, it's reached across the ocean to all of us here in the U.S. It's been a bad week for Jews. It was obviously probably the worst single day in the history of the state of Israel. The loss, I think, is unfathomable.
It is to Americans, because it only sounds like, well, 1,200 people. But given the small population, Israel's population is 9 million,
yeah,
7 million of whom are Jews. So extrapolate out the number of dead.
30,000 Americans?
I think it's more now. I think it would be more in the range of like 40,000 to 50,000 Americans. So imagine a 9/11 like that. Not to torture the 9/11 analogy.
Well, I think, you know, I'm sure you've spoken to many people over there, as I have. And everybody has been saying the same thing. And they say it in Hebrew, they'll say it in English. There are no words.
Yeah.
There are no words.
I think, and then some of the messages that I've gotten back have just been, you know, first, I just want to say I've been on and off the phone with our friend Evan and his wife Jamie, whose kids I know quite well, and both of whom are in uniform. So they're obviously quite stressed about the situation. And their son has been down south and I think has seen things that he, you know, never imagined he would see. So on and so forth. But I also spoke with I messaged with a friend who used to work in the prime minister's office. And I mean, what do you say? Like, what do you say when you message them? So you don't say, how are you? Are you okay? You say, thinking of you. And the message I got back was, people I know are dead. Everyone else is in uniform or missing. Like,
yeah.
that's something like as an American Jew, like doesn't even like that was probably one of the most jarring messages I got back. Ironically, that guy's name is Shalom. Anyway, that was probably one of the most jarring messages I got in this entire week about what had happened. It's to me, and we were just talking about this. The Israelis are, you know, going to do what they're going to do. The die has been cast. they're not much in listening mode. The country is angry and vengeful. And they've clearly decided that living with Hamas is no longer an option. And that is going to create a terrible humanitarian crisis and suffering for people. But there's, but then the question back is, you know, what are the Israelis supposed to do under these circumstances?
Well, and yeah, that's, this is where you and I were talking about
there's, yeah. You know, they don't have an answer, nor anyone else has an answer. And so the policy, security policy being a choice of really terrible decisions, this is the decision that they have made.
Yeah. I think, you know, like you were saying, we were talking about this before, and, you know, anybody who's saying right now, like, there should be an immediate ceasefire, calling for an immediate ceasefire, like, that's completely divorced from reality.
Completely divorced from reality.
Like,
I heard someone say the other day, I heard someone say with a straight face that there should be a negotiation. I was like, have you read the Hamas charter? I mean, you have to suspend disbelief to believe that Hamas, you know, because especially, and this is where I'm particularly angry about, which are people commenting on this, that when Hamas military commanders talk about the longest occupation in history, they're not talking about liberating the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. They're talking about liberating all of historic Palestine, which in their worldview is sacralized. It's an Islamic cause, and how they plan to liberate it is through violence. And
look what they did. They didn't just plan it. This is what they did.
This is what
they attacked kibbutzim and settlements, not in the Gaza Strip, because there are no Israeli settlements in the Gaza Strip. This wasn't in the West Bank. This is in Israel proper. This is in the consensus part of Israel.
So, and then, like we were also talking about the number of civilians just randomly killed. Again, I don't want to bring it into work stuff, but I have spoken with people in official positions in Washington this week, and the way they talk about it is they talk about it as ISIS-like violence. So,
yeah,
you know, that I don't think that that's an exaggeration. There were some irresponsible people who were thought to be responsible on social media saying that the administration was advancing Israeli propaganda. But then the Israelis released photos. I mean, it's horrifying. And think about it. Hamas wanted to kill as many Jews as possible, including children. No Hamas fighter, as far as we know, walked into a child's room in Sherrod or wherever and said, "I'm not going to kill this little child."
Even if one did, the overwhelming majority did not.
Right. The others did not. The others said, "No. We're gonna do this."
Right. And they did it. They did it.
And this celebrated it.
Yes. And there are people around the world who continue to celebrate.
Right.
So I think you and I are in, I don't want to say violent agreement, but we're in.
Let's not go with violent. Yeah. Let's go.
We're in complete agreement that if Hamas had gone into Israeli territory, attacked army bases and police stations only, those are legitimate military targets. When you kill 260
before anybody misunderstands what you're saying is that at a moral hierarchies, one can at least say these are military bases that are being attacked. They are actual targets that in some way are, you know, deemed to be legitimate rather than killing children and their parents in their beds.
Or partiers at a rave.
People at a rave.
So if you're saying, you know, I am for the legitimate resistance, and if you include armed resistance as, you know, as part of the tactics that you will use, if you see them as legitimate military targets, you're now including babies as legitimate military targets. Like, how are you justifying that? Look,
I'll tell you that for many years on Al Jazeera, there is a preacher who made the case that since every Israeli serves in the military, they are legitimate targets.
And, you know, that's the Franz Fanon, you know, like all colonialism is illegitimate and any attack on anything is totally permitted. And you know what?
Well, this is the fusion of the global hard left and violent extremism.
Yes. And it's problematic, to say the least, for liberal or progressive Jews who are stuck here, because Jews are always seem to be excluded from this whole equation when we're talking about liberation or freedom. Everybody else seems
We're white, wealthy, and powerful. Well, it's the whole intersectionality argument.
Yeah, well, we don't count in the intersectionality argument. We're the oppressed.
As
we're
said this week, intersectionality is going to get someone killed.
Well, Jews are always the oppressor. We're never the oppressed. Right. And so we're always the target. We're always a legitimate target. The babies are legitimate. The party goers are legitimate. Mm-hmm. Every Jew is a legitimate target. Okay. That's essentially what they're saying. And unfortunately,
what Hamas is saying.
Yes. But there are too many people who are not condemning that.
Right. Including, I could go on and on about the number of people who either have not condemned it, supported it, or have issued mealy-mouth, both-sidisms kind of thing about it.
Again, so going back to what I was saying.
I think it's important to say, though, at this two important things to say at this moment before we go any further, that or three things I should say. One, it's perfectly legitimate to say that this was a horrifying act of wanton, barbaric violence perpetrated against predominantly civilians. And two, be quite critical of Israeli conduct in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. There's clearly dispossession of the Palestinian people, human rights violations, violence, et cetera, et cetera. Three, it's okay to have really complicated feelings about this. Four, wait, there's a fourth thing. There is a danger here of, as much as Jews and Israelis have been dehumanized in a variety of cultural and educational institutions, there's a danger here of further dehumanizing Palestinians. And we can't engage in that as well. I'm up close to a Palestinian / Jordanian American every workday, and who does not subscribe to Hamas's methods, who only wants what's best for the world, and is as stressed and concerned and sad and depressed as all of us. And that makes everything so incredibly sad and complicated about everything that has happened and that everything that will happen.
There are human beings on both sides of this. Yeah. There are innocent people on both sides.
And I was telling you before, I'm more angry at people here. I'm more angry at the Democratic Socialists of America, who Richie Torres quite accurately called an anti-Semitic stain on New York City. And everybody's heroine, AOC, didn't bother to condemn the Democratic Socialists of America, who have engaged in this pernicious campaign of anti-Semitism and lining up with Hamas. The pernicious campaign of anti-Semitism has been going on for quite some time. And they've lined up with Hamas since Saturday. I'm angry at university administrators. I'm angry at faculty members. I'm angry at people who just they want to both sides everything here. And it's
up to both sides killing kids at a rave and babies in their beds and entire families and taking families hostage.
Hostage. Were you those things that you posted that appeared on the Upper West Side?
Yeah, the missing persons posters.
Haunting.
Yeah.
I mean, I always kid you how your neighborhood is like Western Israel. I mean, it must be really.
But you know what? But people rip some of those posters down.
Well, so this is the question we were talking about before, how frayed my allyship is.
Yeah. You know, I know that, you know, as you're an academic, like you're focused on that as well. You should be. I'm angry about that, but not
angry
not
about what extent,
about what's going on in academia.
Oh no, but that's separate from my allyship.
Okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, to me, right now, like that's a little bit more in the background, and I'm.
It's definitely in the background. I mean, there's a war that's going on, but there's also there's also an aspect of it that is also happening.
And
I'm going to be perfectly frank with you. One of the things is that I'm going to have a kid on a college campus next year. This time,
I have a kid on a college campus, and I'm going to have two next year on a college campus.
But I'm telling you, it's coming from me. But
I get it. But I'm more right now. I'm thinking more about what's about to happen on the ground. And what's already happened on the ground. And the people who I know who are dealing with the unthinkable and the potential, the potential that it's going to get so much worse in the next few days for all of them. I'm not just talking about the humanitarian mm-hmm. catastrophe that could unfold in Gaza. I'm talking about the people who I know whose children are on the front lines.
Yes. This is something that's quite worrying. Just from also from like a strategic, like just looking at it in the analytic lens. You know, the Israeli military is very small and it's dependent upon reservists.
Yeah.
And many of these reservists have served their duty without ever serving in combat. And there's going to be a lot of lives lost on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Talia during the week, and, you know, she had reached out to a bunch of people who she knows in Israel, you know, girls from camp or just friends in the family, just to, you know, show them that she's thinking about them. And I didn't want to overly dramatize this, but I said to her, I'm like, this isn't easy for me to say. I'm like, but you have to think, you have to get yourself ready for the possibility that somebody who you know may die.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just, it's amazingly frightening. I always say, you know, like Evan's kids, Evan's son was at my wedding. He was a 5-month-old baby, but he was at my wedding. You know, I love that. Little guy, he's 25 years old. Yes, these are things that are deeply and profoundly anxiety producing. Or how about this? I called Riyadh. You know Riyadh. Mm-hmm. He's living in Geneva. His parents split their time between Europe and Lebanon. And I just got this hinky feeling. And I was driving to the office and I called him. And I was like, where are your parents? He said, I'm so glad you called because 2 days from now, they think they're going to Lebanon and we can't talk them out of it. And I was like, they can't go. Please beg. This is, I spent a week with them around Riyadh's wedding in 2019, 2018. I mean, this is like family. And I said, you have to beg them on behalf of me not to go. Because of the possibility of a second front and what would happen in Lebanon if there was a second front. Utter total destruction. So
yeah, the possibility of a regional war is hard.
Right, and then the extended group of people that we know, Israelis, Americans, Arabs, Arab Americans, you know, it's... But again, but we can't lose sight of the fact that Hamas invaded Israel intending to kill as many people, including innocents, as they possibly could.
And succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. This is the crossing for them. This is the October 6th crossing.
Of course. That's why do you think it happened on the 50 years in 1 day since Egypt crossed the Suez Canal totally unexpectedly. The Israelis didn't see it coming. At the beginning of the October 1973 war.
Okay, let me ask you something, because you just said totally unexpectedly.
Well.
I'm sure you heard the news reports this week that the Egyptian foreign minister had warned his Israeli counterparts about things that he had, the Egyptian intelligence had gathered. What do you know? What do you know about that?
So this is we've been having a conversation about this at work. Believe me, there's been lots of activity at work around this crisis. And one of my colleagues is a student, is a somewhat of a student of these kinds of quote unquote intelligence values. And he said, almost always, the intelligence services or leadership of the country that is surprised almost always actually has the information that something is coming, but that they fail to put. They fail to quote unquote connect the dots. And so it strikes me that, you know, Israel was distracted by the political turbulence of the last 9 months. They were had tremendous belief in their technology and that they could listen in and see into the Gaza Strip in superior ways, not anticipating that Hamas would go low or no tech. That they had moved forces away from the Gaza Strip to deal with violence in the West Bank, which may have been part of a Hamas deception campaign.
Or it may have been part of the fact that the current Israeli government is obsessed with the West Bank and annexation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
May have been currently run
either one of those things. Well, no, this is one that's going to be studied for the ages. Yeah. And that there was a sense of complacency because it seemed that Hamas wanted to rule, govern, and get rich. There were 15,000 to 18,000 Palestinian day laborers who were coming across the border to work in Israel. By the way, those borders are horrible. It's not like showing a piece of paper and keep going kind of thing. And that's why Egyptian warnings and maybe American warnings and other warnings were not heeded.
I'm going to say this, and I don't think it's going to be controversial between you and me, but I think maybe some of our listeners that might not want to hear this. Obviously Hamas is to blame for this attack because they carried it out, but I also hold the current government of Israel responsible.
I think a lot of Israelis do as well, but right now they're rallying around the country.
But not around the government.
Not around the government.
Not around the government.
That's not the sense that I get in talking to people.
No, people are angry because they feel pissed,
they're rallying around Israel, not the government. When this is over, there's likely to be a political reckoning.
I don't know that it's even going to wait until it's over. And it's interesting that, what I've seen here.
That would just add a further element of instability, though, into a currently unstable.
Yeah, that's true. But people,
on TV, a dynamic situation.
The government is still non-existent almost a week after the attacks. And the response has been horrible. And the way that the people who have been directly impacted have been treated by the government is scandalous.
Well, I had heard Netanyahu won't take any questions. He won't acknowledge it. There was the first meeting of the National Unity Government. There was no moment of silence for the people who have been killed.
He's a complete piece of crap. But what I found to be interesting, and I feel like it's important for me to mention it, the anti-Netanyahu government protests that have been going on in Israel every week since the government was took power, like however many weeks, 37, 38 weeks ago. There are counterparts here in the U.S. of people who have been organizing the protests and who really, have been active. In mobilizing the anti-government sentiment and protest movement. They're the same people who, the minute this attack happened, have been mobilizing to get food, money, equipment, people.
Right.
These are the most patriotic people you will ever see.
I have been hearing stories like that from people that I've spoken to in Israel as well, that there is a rallying around the country.
Because Israelis love their home.
Right.
They hate their current government, many of them, but they will fight to protect their families and their friends and their homes. And when that is put at risk, the wagons get circled.
Right.
But unlike here, because a lot of people are saying, look what happened in the U.S. after 9/11 and George W. Bush. BB is not George W. Bush, and the situations are not similar.
Right.
And Israel is not the United States.
I mean,
any Israeli prime minister has one job, and that job is to protect the lives.
And Netanyahu has been saying that he's Mr. Security.
Mr. Security failed
the biggest failure since 1973. So now the biggest biggest failure in the state's history.
And this is the person who his sole job was to protect Israelis. When he proved incapable of doing that, he lost his power. He lost his, not that he was had a lot of legitimacy to begin with, but I don't see, and again, I could be proven wrong, I don't see how he is able to continue as prime minister after this. And again, it won't be today. It won't be tomorrow. Like you said, you know, when the dust settles and when accounts start to be settled, I don't see how he keeps his job.
Yeah. Nope. Good. I don't see. I don't know. I mean, maybe. Likely, but not 100%.
Nothing's 100%.
No, but the country has moved to the right. There is no peace camp. You never know what a war might do, however, may open new avenues, rethinking of things and so on and so forth. But that's not the vibe that I'm picking up from Israel. Certainly the Israelis I've spoken to have no love lost for Netanyahu, including ones who've worked with him. Maybe especially the ones who've worked,
But have you seen the footage from Israel of people when government ministers have shown up in public places?
Was it the environment minister out of the hospital?
Yes.
Yeah, that was sort of some good righteous indignation going on there.
Yeah, I feel like that is the overwhelming sentiment among Israelis today.
Right.
So whether you're right or left, like, it's a question of the competency of your leadership. And the Israeli government so far has proven to be not only incompetent and corrupt, but completely incapable of protecting and defending the lives of its citizens.
That's exactly right. And that is job one. That is very different from American president, because there's always been this sense that there is security and that hasn't been.
Right.
Obviously, that is the first responsibility of all governments, but Americans don't live in the same situation as Israelis do. So,
I think, you know, we could go on about this
on and on and on
5 or 6 hours, but it's probably not going
to. And like I said, it's okay for people to have extraordinarily difficult feelings about this, especially as the Israelis are going to invade the Gaza Strip, displace 1 million people. There will be a humanitarian disaster. I think the Israelis feel they have no choice. They're probably right.
This is something you and I were talking about before we got on. And you're like, well, what's the alternative to this?
You know, there is I understand.
There are people. But you and I are not saying do nothing.
Right, of course.
We're saying something is going to be done. Something, of course, has to be done. But the question is, how far is it going to go?
Right.
How many lives are going to be impacted negatively?
Many.
I mean, the question is how many, right? Like, are we talking?
Unknowable. These are the
tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions.
The Israelis may find themselves sucked into a conflict that they don't necessarily want after a period of time.
There's no solution.
Part of the strategy here for Hamas. So,
and a lot of people are still. A lot of people are still thinking that this is all something that Hamas had played out, and they're expecting a certain response.
Look.
And what kind of traps are Israelis, or is Israel going to wade into?
When we discovered troves of information about Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda's planning, they absolutely intended to draw the United States into these long, drawn-out conflicts half a world away that would weaken American society and its economy and so on.
And it worked.
And it worked. It absolutely worked 100%.
And it worked.
So... no doubt the Israelis are aware of this, but there's also that risk that however aware you are of it, faced with really no good choices, you get sucked in anyway. Something.
Well, you're faced with no good choices, like you said, but the option of not doing anything is not an option.
I heard someone say negotiate. I almost dropped what I was holding in my hand. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's not... That's not even like reading the Israeli public in any way, shape, or form. That's like someone in Washington just opining in bullshit land. So
there, I mean, look, eventually there will be some sort of negotiation.
Well,
eventually, but like it's not today and tomorrow.
Every war must end, right? But
exactly. And you know, that reminds me, somebody, I'm not naming names. I don't think you know this person. It doesn't even matter who it was, but they posted something on social media the other day. Ugh, and I'm looking at it right now.
I haven't really been on.
Good.
I promised Lauren I wouldn't spend this war on social media. And I've been saying that if given the choice of a bullet to the head or having to be on social media during this conflict, I may actually take the bullet.
I don't think so. But anyway, maybe a little too fine of a point. But anyway, so you mentioned Golda Meir earlier, and Golda Meir is getting a new look, a new review these days. And I'm not necessarily
I'm actually going to see that movie tomorrow night at work. There's a screening at the office.
I'm not sure it's a good thing, because this person posted a picture of Golda Meir with a quote, and not the quote that you're thinking.
Oh.
It's not the quote that you're
really?
Thinking. Which? Yes.
Okay. Go.
It's not the quote about making us kill their children.
No. Is it the quote about Palestinians?
No.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You cannot negotiate peace with somebody who has come to kill you. And I look at that and I say, who are you supposed to negotiate peace with if not your enemy?
Right. Of course. But again, talking about the moral hierarchies, you can negotiate with peace. Like the difference between – people keep all these tortured analogies, right? So October 1973. It's October 1973 all over and it's October 2023. Anwar Sadat lied to the Soviets and the Syrians and said – I'm all in. We're going to destroy Israel so he could get all this equipment. But he directed the armed forces. All he wanted was a toehold in the Sinai Peninsula that he calculated would open up diplomatic opportunities to bring the conflict to an end. Hamas went in to destroy Israel.
I'm not questioning
I'm just saying
that.
That there I'm are differences
is,
here.
Yes, of course. But what I'm saying is when you throw out a blanket statement, like, when you can't negotiate with somebody who's going to come to kill you.
Yep.
When it comes to making peace, you can only make peace with your enemies because you've already got peace with your friends.
Of course.
So, eventually, I'm not talking about right now. There needs
to be. Well, I was just you read my mind because I was like, of course, this is just a theoretical, airy fairy conversation. No peace processes. No can't. There's no peace camp. But, no one wants to have peace, et cetera.
But eventually, if Israel wants to continue to exist in the region, it's going to have to figure out a way to live.
Well, and that I think was part of the complacency was that you could normalize your relations with countries around the region and not have to do and annex the West Bank throughout.
And the Palestinians are not going to be a problem and not going to have an issue with it. And I feel like that fallacy.
A checked box. They would have to do a few things that was a checked box on the way to the signing ceremony with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Yes.
Well, I feel like that fallacy has gone out the
window. Yeah, I think it's likely. The Saudis are unhappy. Yeah. Anyway.
They're hitting the pause button. Anyway, before we go, and hopefully in the coming weeks, we'll get back to the usual banter and bullshit between the two of us. But please. That would be a good sign,
Like
when we can just talk about nonsense again.
Yeah.
But until then, I want to mention that this past weekend, or this past Shabbat, more specifically, our producer, Daron Ruske, his twin sons, Bezalel and Nachshon, celebrated their bar mitzvah.
Big mazel, Daron!
Yeah, big mazel. The kids, both of them are big baseball fans.
Nice.
Even though they're Mets fans. They don't say anything about that. But to use the baseball analogy, they both knocked it out of the park.
I would expect nothing else, knowing Daron. Yeah.
But it was nice. And I think everybody in that room felt like this is what we need
now. Right. They needed a big celebration. Do you put Daron up in a chair?
No. Not in the service.
No.
I don't know. But we needed to hear the voices of children singing.
Right.
And that's what we got.
That's very, very nice, actually, given everything that's happened. The voices of children singing is very nice.
So let's we gotta call that out, and we have to remember to celebrate even in the times of grief. That's what we do.
Hanukkah is coming up.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All right.